Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women. This is Judy Rubenstein and Nancy Holmes interviewing Milton Sussman at his home on the morning of December 6, 1975. Mr. Sussman, I'd like to ask you first about your family, perhaps starting with your grandparents.
Well, on my father's side, the family came from the Netherlands, from Holland. Early arrivals here, I think, around the time of the Civil War in this country. And on my mother's side, they came from the northeastern part of Germany, an area that I visited during World War II to find it was pretty well shot up by our Air Force. But at least I was able to see what was left of the town. And they came over. They also came over about the middle of the 19th century, which means that my parents were born in this country. I'm born here, of course. My son's a third generation Pittsburgher. I thought I was born in this town.
Did you actually know your grandparents?
Oh, yeah. Yes, both sides, yes. They gravitated to Pittsburgh on my mother's side from Bradford, Pennsylvania. For what reason, I don't know. They may have wanted to go into the oil business. I've always suspected my mother was born in an oil well. I don't think that's true. But they lived exclusively in the eastern part of the country. My parents and grandparents. So I knew all of them, perhaps with the exception of my paternal grandmother, who died when I was quite young, so the memory of her is kind of dim. But all of the others I knew well.
Can you give us their names?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I might mention that through some work that my wife did on the history of the Jewish community in Pittsburgh, I discovered a great-grandmother and great-grandfather whose graves are located in the same cemetery with my grandparents, in which I had passed for years of my life and didn't know that they were my great-grandparents. How about this? Yeah. They're out in the Tree of Life Cemetery in Sharpsburg. Those two I never knew. But the great-grandparents are Rachel Sussman and Louis Sussman. My paternal grandfather is Jacob, and grandmother Annie.
Do you happen to know her maiden name, Annie's maiden name?
Yes, Pimentel, P-I-M-E-N-T-E-L. Of which there is a family still living in Amsterdam, and I communicated with them when I was last in Amsterdam.
Can you describe your parents for us?
Well, I didn't finish with the paternal grandparents.
All right, I'm sorry.
Maternal grandparents. On my mother's side, my grandfather is Simon Brockstein, B-R-O-C-K-S-T-E-I-N. And my grandmother is Rosa, R-O-S-A, her maiden name being Herrick, H-E-R-R-I-C-K, of whom there's still some living in Pittsburgh. Now, what was that question?
Oh, I'm sorry I preempted you.
That's all right.
Now, give us your parents' names and then describe them for us.
Well, my father, David Sussman, died, unfortunately, at a very early age. My mother's name is Rebecca. Of course, she's a Brockstein. And after 7 years of working, which my mother had to do to see that I got food and clothing, she remarried to a gentleman by the name of Joseph Brooks. And I was very fortunate to have perhaps one of the greatest guys in the world as a stepfather. I acquired a stepbrother and a stepsister through that marriage, and probably the only decent thing I've ever done in my life was to name my son after my stepfather. So I figured if Brooks is good enough for Brooks Atkinson, it's good enough for my son. And his name is Brooks Sussman, now a rabbi. My natural father was a newspaperman. He worked on the old Pittsburgh Leader here in this city. He was a sports writer. You have to be a little insane to be in the newspaper business. This is why I'm in it. He later left that profession because it wasn't paying enough to join up with the Van Camp Company, which sells college markets, coffees, teas, canned goods, and whatnot, because he made a better dollar. And it was with that company, that he was employed at the time of his death. My stepfather was in the real estate business. He was known as a real estate broker. And the stepsister that I acquired, who died unfortunately of cancer some years ago, had a tremendous effect on my life. I think if she hadn't been my stepsister, I'd have married her. My stepbrother is still living. He's in the construction business in New York State. Mm-hmm. I being an only child. No natural brothers and sisters.
How particularly did this stepsister influence you?
Well, she aroused in me a tremendous interest in books, literature generally, in the performing arts, in the fine arts. She prevailed upon me to pursue the field which I studied in college, English. She herself, being a speech specialist and also a librarian at Carnegie Library, although she preferred teaching, and at the time of her death she was on the faculty of Hunter College in New York City. So as a result, I think I became slightly more sensitive and did what she encouraged me to do, follow the field of English. And so I went to a school which had a fairly decent English department. And I think that's one of the reasons why I am teaching in that field now, and have been ever since my teaching career began, or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Before we go on to your education, can you tell me something about the atmosphere of your home, the religious and cultural atmosphere?
Ours was one of the few Jewish families in this community that did not drift toward what was known as the Jewish Medina at the time. The Jewish community in this town, the city of Pittsburgh, was originally on the north side, where, by the way, we had the Gusky Orphanage for a long time. My father happened to be born on the north side. The community then drifted across the river and established in what is known as the Hill District, which, as you know, is now predominantly, if not solely, black. For whatever reason I shall never understand, my family located in the East End District of Pittsburgh, which is known as Garfield, probably then as now one of the toughest areas in the city. Rough, tough young men and women. We were the only Jewish family there. I had some difficulty for years convincing my contemporaries that I did not come to people who crucified Jesus, and it took me all week to convince them, which I succeeded in doing, that we did not do that dastardly act. And then on Sundays, since the community was predominantly Roman Catholic, they went to their parish church, which was presided over by a priest who insisted that the Jews did crucify Jesus. So on Monday morning, I had the same job to do all over again, and it took me through the succeeding week to convince them that we didn't do it. And then Sunday, they got the story in reverse. So my early youth was spent pretty much in convincing my contemporaries that we didn't do this job and avoiding punches in the jaw, because there were a few there that got excited about what their priest had to say, and they would come at me on Monday morning with the question through clenched teeth, why did you crucify our Lord like this? So it took me the whole week to undo this. Finally, when as we grew up, they became, the neighborhood became more realistic about this. A couple of other Jewish families moved into the neighborhood and helped me do my job. And when I went to the school, which I was fortunate enough to get into, I suppose their respect for me rose a couple of cuts. And I became manager of the ball team and spokesman for the neighborhood, only because most of them had the peculiar knack of being able to speak sentence after sentence without using verbs. This is not easy. So since I was able to use a few verbs, I was appointed to these high posts. I came from a very positive Jewish background. It was reform all the way through. The only exception to that was my wife, who came from an Orthodox background in Butler, Pennsylvania, where she was born and raised. But she gradually grew away from the highly ritualized approach to Judaism and came over to my side. This transition was it was no feather in my cap, or was not due to any influence I exerted, because I'm married to the kind of woman whom you don't influence that easily. She has very definitely a spirit of her own. But she saw, I think, in Reform Judaism, an approach to the faith that is more consistent with the modern temper of things. But the family background, my family background, includes charter members of the Tree of Life congregation here in the city. My father's folks were too conservative for Rav Sholem. And so shortly after Rav Sholem was established, my father's forebears broke away and established the Tree of Life congregation, which even today, by the way, is conservative to reform. It's really Reconstructionist here in the community, which is a kind of reform conservatism. So that it happens that my forebears are buried in two cemeteries. My father's folks in Tree of Life, and my mother's folks in Westview, which is the cemetery of the Reform Congregate, Rav Sholem. So I got a shuttle between the two, just as I'm doing now on the two campuses.
You say your background was a positive Reform Jewish, but how active were your parents in Jewish affairs?
Well, unfortunately, my father wasn't. He didn't have a chance.
By the way, how old were you when he died?
I was about 11, 12 years old. And so his work on the newspaper and the brevity of his life, I think both know. He was in his early 40s when he died. Mm-hmm. My mother was active in the community and the organization which you represent. And in the sisterhood of the congregation, it being, of course, Rosh Hashanah, because that's my, as I said, that's my mother's folks. We're all Reformed. My stepfather, not particularly active in the community because, like so many other men, unfortunately, his life was purely business. He identified as a Jew. He attended services, but active in the community, not particularly. My grandparents, I wouldn't say were particularly identified with the organizational life in our community. However, they all identified with their respective congregations. I think I mentioned a moment ago that my paternal grandparents were among the charter members of Tree of Life. I suppose the participation in the community began with me, and I've been doing a few things around.
Which we want to ask you about in a minute. Did you have a question?
Okay. When we were talking about your grandparents, I was wondering, why did they leave Europe to come here?
Why?
Yes.
There was, unlike so many others of the immigrants, they were not compelled to do so. My maternal grandparents always had a desire to come to the United States, not surprisingly, because they felt it offered a greater opportunity to make a living, to raise children, to educate children. But as I don't think I have to remind you, at that time there were not only no anti-Jewish pressures in Germany, but Germany, being part of Western civilization, offered as great an opportunity for education and learning to Jews as any country in Europe. Certainly that's true of Holland. There was no problem there. There was no attempt to avoid military service or to escape from anti-Jewish harassments, and so they came quite voluntarily because they were as certain as anyone could be that the opportunity for a fuller life was more accessible in this country. They had read and heard about freedom and independence of thought and action in this country, and so they wanted some of it, and they got it. My paternal grandparents were in a rather strange business for Jews. My paternal grandfather owned a circus, and I've always had the suspicion that my father was born on a trapeze, because that's the way he went through life. He was a delightfully insane creature for the very few years that he lived. He had a marvelous sense of humor, and was a pretty good writer. If sports writing can be considered writing, I think it is. So I don't know of any other Jew in that business.
Was he in that in Europe, or he just happened to
get in? No, I think he didn't bring the same personnel, but he was in that business over there, and he continued it here. And I think it's legendary, but he always boasted of his feats in the circus. He prided himself on a very healthy and robust physique. And he would often regale us, particularly me. And I would say my mother also. He loved to tell the in-laws about how lucky they were to be married into that family. He said he had a strong man in his employ who was on many occasions absent without explanation, and he would have to substitute for the strong man, so he gloried in describing the feat in which he tied himself to a pole, and eight horses could not pull him loose. Well, my mother, who had somewhat of a warped sense of humor, would alter the story slightly, and when she retold it to others, would describe my grandfather thus: he tied himself to a pole and ate horses. Well, that would arch a few brows who couldn't quite understand what the hell was going on, but this was my mother. So I come from a circus family somewhere back. Then he went into, later, the circus business not being at that time what it was much later when Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey made it an institution, went as many of our co-religionists do into the clothing business on the north side. He found that much more lucrative and much less of a headache because he didn't have to sweep up after the horses.
Tell us a little about your mother.
She was great.
Describe your stepfather.
She was a wonderful person, as I suppose most mothers are. She, for a woman who had very little formal education, she incidentally went to the Forbes School down on Forbes Avenue near the Mercy Hospital, which is now raised, not the Mercy Hospital, Forbes School. She didn't have too much bent for formal education. She would circumvent the school every opportunity she had, I suppose you'd call it hooky or truancy. And she also had a mind of her own, and this particular day she had a difference of opinion with the principal, and she expressed her disagreement with the principal not only verbally but by punching the principal in the face. Her mother, my grandmother, was brought down to school to answer for the daughter's aberration, and a very happy conclusion, amicable conclusion, was reached by my mother being expelled. Of course, in those days, there was no law requiring children to remain in school until they were 16, and that made my mother very happy, of course, because she didn't. So she went to work for my grandfather, my maternal grandfather, who was what is known now as a journeyman tailor, a tailor to the exclusive taste, so to speak. There was a greater market for that sort of tailoring in those days because you didn't have many machine-made garments such as you do today. So she would work for him as kind of a general factotum, a delivery boy, or in this era of feminism, the superiority of the female sex, an errand girl, and would work around the shop and so forth. And on many occasions, the customer came to grief because my grandfather would have my mother deliver, on one occasion, a pair of trousers to the customer who needed that, in this instance, that evening, for a wedding. She started out, and they were living down near where Duquesne University now stands. They were living on the bluff, and she started out toward what is now the Golden Triangle to deliver these trousers to the gentleman when the Salvation Army band happened to come along. And my mother had an insane penchant for drums. And so when she saw the boom, she heard the boom boom of the drums and saw this genius of a drummer, she followed the band to the north side, carrying all the while this poor gentleman's trousers. She had forgotten entirely about him. Well, frantically, the gentleman was calling my grandfather, "Where are my pants? I can't very well go to the wedding, you know how." And my grandfather, of course, being nonplussed and most apologetic, couldn't understand why they hadn't reached there. I gave them to my daughter, Rebecca, an hour ago. She should have reached there in half that time. As of this conversation, my mother was wandering around the north side following the Salvation Army band. The upshot of it was that the customer went in his swallowtail jacket or coat with the trousers that he probably would have preferred to wear to Kennywood Park. It was not the happiest combination, but at least he wasn't arrested for indecent exposure. When my mother, who later attempted to deliver the trousers but found the gentleman gone, came back home with the trousers, she got, what do you think, from my grandfather. But somehow or other this didn't cure her, because on another occasion after this, she was to deliver a suit to a customer. And going down Fifth Avenue past what is now the Warner Theater, it was then called the Grand Theater, and I'm certain as I am that I'm sitting here that you haven't the slightest notion of what the Grand Theater was. She looked at the building outside, and her favorite performer was showing at that moment in the theater. Well, my grandfather always gave my mother enough change for a bill, should it be presented for the job. So she had enough for admission, and she figured, well, I will go in and see my favorite performer, whose name slips me. As though this were not enough, she stayed not for one performance, not for two, but for three showings of the picture. And that evening, my grandfather, because my grandmother suspected that her daughter was up to one of her antics, my grandfather found my mother asleep. She moved up with each performance, asleep in the first row of the Grand Theater, using as a pillow the garment that she was supposed to deliver. Well, do you suspect why she never made it to Mayhew? A delightfully crazy person. She had a sense of humor which I would have been most grateful to inherited.
What qualities do you think you did derive from her?
Well, I think I would have to have a sense of humor to survive. Otherwise, in this alien world, I think I'd be climbing walls. She was articulate. She was a knowledgeable woman without formal education, but there's nothing unusual about this because many of that generation had little formal education. My own father, by the way, was considered a highly educated person because he was the only one of 11 children who finished high school. And when you had a high school diploma in those days, you were among the educated elite, I should say, because this was not too long after the turn of the century. But she was a very sensitive person, deeply in love with the sheer joy of living. She was a hedonist if ever I encountered one. And besides that, she was attractive. That when that stuff was passed out by her, I was hiding behind the door, as you can see.
I'm not even going to comment on that.
Please don't.
Not fair to yourself. Let's move on to your tell me a little bit about your actual formal education, starting with primary school.
Well, living in Garfield, I went to, naturally, to Garfield Grammar School. It has since been raised. Incidentally, it was located at that time, very old school. I think I walked most of my youth on the bias because the school leaned. It was situated directly behind the Roman Catholic Church, where our priest friend succeeded in having the youngsters do such a job on me. The land in which it was situated, the school was situated, was later bought by the parish, and now there is an extension of the parochial school there. But I went to Garfield School, and in those days you had to go to the secondary, the high school, which was located in the district in which you lived. So I should have gone to Peabody High School. I did not go to Peabody High School for 2 weeks.